T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Well, welcome to Tuesday. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland, and this is the Voice of Pittsburgh, KDKA Radio. So just about a week ago, we celebrated Bill Nunn, the legendary scout for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we spoke to his granddaughter, Sydney. We saw her pictures on Facebook as his bust was unveiled, and the reason that Bill Nunn was inducted is being inducted, is in being enshrined into the NFL Hall of Fame, is because of his work for the Pittsburgh Steelers, going to HBCUs, finding players that might otherwise have been overlooked for the NFL draft. So that was a big moment. That was history. That was exciting. Today, the headline in USA Today, Deion Sanders, Jackson State coach, angry that HBCU players were passed over in the 2021 NFL draft. So what's different from the 70s to 2021? Why were the Steelers forward-thinking enough to do this then, but we're not doing it now? JT Thomas, the legendary JT Thomas of Pittsburgh Steeler fame, joins me once again on the Disc Institute at Pittsburgh Newsline. Welcome back, JT.
Hi, Lynn. How you doing today?
I'm great. Although when I called you to talk about this, you didn't seem surprised at all.
No, I'm not. I think you look what happened historically. Historically, prior to the advent of the integration, there weren't any African Americans, so the pool of athletes were in historical black colleges. And that's where Bill Nunn went there, obviously, and had the relationships, and obviously you saw pool awesome talent out. What has happened via integration, a lot of African Americans now are in the other major colleges. So you don't have to go there. Obviously, you can go to, you know, the bigger schools, and you have African Americans there. Where in Bill Nunn days, they didn't exist. Mm. I mean, I was one of the few, but you know, I was the one that was, you know, breaking color lines. So there weren't that many in the 70s that were coming from his let's say historical black. I mean, from white college that were black, and I happen to be one of them. But right. Like I said, I'm the first black football player at Florida State, which is, people don't believe that.
So, just for reference, what year was that? You were the first black player at Florida State?
Yeah, I went there in 1969. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the schools in the South were not recruiting African Americans despite the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That wasn't the case. The University of Georgia, Vince Dooley, he was asked to consider me as the first player at Georgia. He said they weren't ready for blacks yet. And Florida State heard his comment, and Bill Peterson, the coach there, called me and said, we're ready.
We're ready.
I mean, it was just the nature of the time.
So, and I appreciate that perspective, and that certainly gives me a different understanding of where we are. But at the same time, I mean, I know that nationally, and certainly in some circles, not necessarily majority society, there has been a push to support HBCUs, to recruit students to HBCUs, to guarantee their longevity going forward. So, and for some students, that's a no-brainer for them. I mean, you know, they're going to an HBCU no matter what. for their own reasons. So isn't that incentive enough to take a look at them?
Well, it is, but you have to understand the social economic construct in America is about capital. And basically when it gets down to capital, that's what it's all about. I mean, you look at who runs the NFL. I mean, you have put out, I think, now three African-American coaches, and maybe I think they hired three general managers in a multi-billion-dollar industry. And, you know, there's an old adage where the snake head goes, the body goes. So you look at the head. Even the head coaches don't run the teams now. You know, they're there to coach them, but who runs the team? The front office. It's about the economics of it, and it's a social construct. It's not fair, just the way it is. I mean, if you look at the team now, the quarterback is looked at as the highest paid player on the team. Okay, and I ask myself why? Because typically, he's the guy that has the, almost say not the most talented, not the most athletic. He's probably his play gives him more options than anyone, and he's at less risk, yet he makes all the money. Now, that doesn't make any sense. I would think the person that at the most risk, the most athletic, who has less options should get the bigger dollar. So you see this construct that we become accustomed to is America.
And then, go ahead, you go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, and it really is that the socialist construct that, you know, we live in a system that's based on racism. Racism is really about economic inequality and social disadvantages. It's not saying everybody's a racist, but the system is like everybody that lives in the system in the ocean is a fish, is wet. Don't mean you're a shark or you're an alligator, you kill everybody. But you're part of a wet, what I call, racist construct. That's the operating system. And until we acknowledge that and acknowledge the effects of it in all aspects of society, we will always be here wondering why. Because people look at racism differently. If you're white, you look at racism as well as one of public access. If you're a minority or black, you look at racism as part of a denial of capital access. So you get one side looking at access, which is part of you get access, but we don't have access. And there you have this division here in terms of how we look at what's wrong with America. Because a lot of people think we have arrived. We haven't arrived. Even when I came to the NFL, there was what we call the white middle. Okay, all the black players. What was the white middle? Well, the white middle is where black players don't play. And you look at that's the middle of the field, and there were some exceptions. You know, I think Kansas City had a middle linebacker, but if you were white, you didn't play quarterback, you didn't play center.
You mean if you were black? If you were black.
Middle linebacker or safeties. Those were white positions, and it was constructed that way, and all the black players knew that. So, you know, if a defensive back come in, what they had to do, if you're black, all the black players was on the corner had to beat each other out. They were not given opportunity to play safeties, and that was that was some exceptions. But if you talk to most black players come out of '60s, come to the early '70s, they knew that was part of the construct. Yeah,
they knew that, the white middle. Hey, JT, I got to take a quick break. Can you hang with me?
Sure.
You know how sometimes you run into someone that is just like a wealth of information, a wealth of knowledge, and you want to just sit down and say, okay, I'm sorry, I need you to school me on this? That's how I feel every time JT Thomas comes on the show. He's on the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh Newsline. Interestingly enough, one of the things I learned about JT Thomas today, he was the first black player at Florida State, went on to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He joins us now to take a look at some comments that Deion Sanders made earlier this week about the lack of the non-existence of HBCU players picked up for the draft that just wrapped up. So, JT, let me ask you this. Obviously, the Steelers had some foresight, some vision, which is why they decided to go that way. So do, I mean, we, and I want to come back to the lack of representation in the front offices and in the coaching positions, but it also seems like some of these other teams now in 2021 ought to be able to look back and say, well, hey, it worked for them. Maybe we should check this out. Something. It just, for none of the HBCU players to be drafted. And I tell you what, I spent a lot of time around HBCU schools and football games, and they are awesome, and so are the players.
Well, you know, let's look at the business model here. What you have here, let's see, HBCU schools and major universities. Like then, when I was coming down, there is a disadvantage. It was. The HBUC schools, okay, if you compare facilities, they're not up to the major white universities. No way. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Not that the players aren't as talented, not as strong. That's not the issue. It's that they're behind the eight ball. So look at the facilities compared. The language, the whole dialogue from major universities is aligned with the NFL. These HBCU schools aren't. And what happened back in the 70s, they weren't then either. It was worse. What happened, I saw that because I was exposed to white universities. But let's say the guys that we had on our team, the Sam Davis, the Dwight, Ernie Holmes, Mel Blount, Glenn Edwards, all these guys, when they came up here, they were great athletes, but you know what? They were at a disadvantage. A guy like Bill Lund fast-tracked them. It's stuff that they had been exposed to. I had been exposed to that. He doesn't fast-track me, although he fast-tracked me some other area of my life. but the point I'm saying is that a guy like Bill Lund fast-tracked these guys and brought them up to snuff so they could relate and compete. They want to return their investment. So they don't want to take the time to do that because I can go to a major white university and get a black athlete who's been exposed to our curriculum, our system, our fraternity, I'm going to put lack of a better word. So it's okay. Kind of a fraternal thing to look at it. So why go to HBCU? So that's more of a challenge. And since if the players are playing with 3 to 4 years, it's about capital. I don't want to invest my capital in training and bring someone up to snuff where I can get a guy right out here today out of one of these big universities who is black. So I answer the quota call. I have blacks, but at the same time, it's a segment that of richness that they are definitely losing. I mean, and opportunities have been denied by great athletes and great people. Yeah. So that's inequity in the situation. Because it should be race neutral. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we had more representation in the front offices, in the front office, in the coaching, in the head coach position, would that make a difference?
I think the league has sometimes, you know, I think the league has to take a position, and it's like anything else. And I think the league recognizes we got a problem here, and obviously. Sometimes, you know, it's like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. We don't, you know, they could go home if they know how to click their heels, but they don't know how to. And that's part of the problem. Like I said, Tony Dungy came out, I guess, this past year, talking about the inequities in the NFL and the way his hiring process went through. I mean, it's there. We haven't arrived. You know, reason I know we have in mind, I have a 20-year-old grandson playing football at Cal U here, and I'm having the same conversations that were had by my mentors when I'm 19 to 20. And it blows my mind. I said, this is ridiculous. 50 years ago, I'm having the same deposits that I'm putting in him, the same dialogue about life. You know, it hasn't changed. What's changed is the technology of racism has changed in our country. But it hasn't changed.
The technology of racism. Like I said, I feel like every time I talk to you, JT Thomas, I just need to sit down and say, school me, my friend, and you do. And I always appreciate you stepping up whenever we call to shed some perspective on something that we don't always get, but I got it today. JT Thomas, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
All right, take good care.